The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
Okay, let's go over to Proverbs 16. I want to give my regards to everybody. And I think it's just wonderful that people of God exist in this time and that they're keeping God's laws. Proverbs 16. In a Peanuts cartoon, Linus and Charlie Brown are having a very serious discussion. Linus says to Charlie, "I have a theological question for you. If when we die, and God judges us, are we graded on a percentage or on a curve?" That's what he wants to know. Without hesitation, Charlie responds, "On a curve, naturally." And then Linus says, "Well, how can you be so sure?" And Charlie answers and he says, "Well, I'm always absolutely sure about those things that are my opinion." Yeah. Is that the truth? It really is. Proverbs 16 and verse 2, "All the ways of man are clean in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirits." And so we may believe that our evaluation of things is right on target, that it's solid. However, God sees our inner standards, our inner values, and our intent and desire, and he judges the thoughts, the values, and standards that we hold. And I bring this up for a reason, and that is this: thinking that our opinion is truth is a path that leads to destruction. Holding various opinions of the truth is a philosophy that allows for this, and it's called relativism. The movement has invaded our nation, it's invaded our schools, and it's invaded the churches in America. This whole philosophy has, and it's invaded the minds of so many people, and it's holding various opinions of what truth is. And you can modulate that, you understand. You can use our sense of relativism to say, well, in this situation, this would be okay, and in that situation, it wouldn't. But the truth is always the truth, but our society is looking at it differently, and we're moving more and more in this direction that has actually been the downfall of many empires that ever occurred before us. They believe, those who believe in relativism, they believe that there's no universal right or wrong that applies to all people. The ethics and morals of every culture is believed to be equally valid, and so what's true for one person may not be true for another. And so relativism holds that truth is therefore relative to our circumstance. The relativists refuse to make a moral judgment because of this on any other cultures, and whatever is accepted in one culture may be in another or may not be in another. And so they have no right in their mind, no right to judge what another culture does. And they have, in their minds, no right to judge what another culture does within our culture. And that's how far it's spread. And so the result today is you're going to hear a number of mantras that are like this. That's true for you, but not for me. That's just your truth. It's just your opinion. That's your set of values, not mine. Who's to say this is wrong? Who are you to say it? You understand my point. This is the relative philosophy that is coming into America like gangbusters. And so they think every single culture should be able to live by its own rules. And the problem is this, that if we accept this invading our culture, the problem is their culture comes into our culture and it defiles or changes or modifies our culture. We're accepting the values and standards of other cultures into our own. And it's going to hurt us, and it's hurt other nations historically. And of course, my issue will always be this: how is this movement affecting us in the church today? Consider, for example, how this influences our entertainment and media. So today, we see vastly increased promiscuity, from what we saw in the 50s. We're seeing in business and in media, in both, we're seeing a coarser language today. The people are cursing in the conference rooms and where they make their decisions. You know, a few young celebrities today are looked at by many of the youth. They're looked at as kind of the role model. And so they want to follow them. And so they're moving in that trend. But the celebrities are not a part of our culture. They're outside our culture, and they exist in their own culture, the Hollywood culture. And so we're stretching reality. And so people are being moved personally and individually. They're being moved more and more towards this, where they make up their own rules for themselves, and they don't believe in any absolutes. So I saw a news program a while back, maybe you remember this, where young people developed a game called the punch game. And so what they would do is the youth would kind of single out older people or weaker people, and they would come up on a bicycle or they'd walk up next to them and just punch them as hard as they could, and just for fun. They'd knock them unconscious sometimes. Just total change. And so the view that permits kids or permits people to allow them to do something like this is this philosophy of relativism. They don't think today they are rejecting the truth. They think they're rejecting your truth. I'm only rejecting your truth. You understand the mindset that this is. They don't believe they're rejecting a truth because there is no real truth. And so they can't be wrong. And today, this is actually being taught socially in our school systems. I warn everybody, a high school textbook entitled Inquiries into Sociology declared this: there are exceptions to almost all moral laws depending on the situation. What's wrong in one instant may be right in another. And of course, you can find that. You know, it might be right to wear shorts to the beach, but it isn't right to wear shorts to church or when you go before the judge. You understand? It's not always right. But then they move that into sexual orientation. They move that into finances. They move that into punch game. You understand? They're moving it into real, honest principles and standards and values that are God's. One blogger wrote this. I think it's just cute the way they said it. Relativism is the philosophy that is taught in our schools and in our media. There's nothing that is true everywhere, and everything is true somewhere. This kind of sums it up, actually. Yale professor Alan Bloom, he wrote the now famous book entitled The Closing of the American Mind, and he was a professor at Yale, and this is a very brilliant doctor, and he stated this: there's one thing a professor can be absolutely certain of. Almost every student entering the university believes or says he believes that truth is relative. That's where our society has moved to. Matthew 7. So we're watching this kind of take place. I know a number of us may be older, and we are not in touch so much with what changes are taking place in our society. But whether it's directly or indirectly, these things in time begin to affect us. The purpose of his book was right there in the title, The Closing of the American Mind. And this is so valuable to understand this truth. He wrote the book to warn Americans of this. By accepting that all cultures are equal, you can never find what is true. You see what I'm saying? This is so important to understand in our society today, that by opening our minds to accept all other cultures as valid closes our minds to ever seeing what's really true and what's really right. So those that are espouse this relativism want all roads to lead to the same place. And so to them, life is this wide open highway filled with all kinds of choices that they have the liberty to take and make in their life. Matthew 7, though, look what Christ says. Matthew 7 and verse 13, enter in at the straight gate. For wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there be many that go that way. And then he says again, straight is the gate, narrow is the way that leads into life, and few be that find it. And then he says, beware of false prophets that come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they're raving wolves. So we picture all these ministers and all these churches preaching false doctrines. But understand, the television, the movies, the books and the magazines, all of these things are false prophets. They're all false teachers, that is. You understand? Teaching our society whatever you want to do is okay. You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes or thorns of figs or thistles? Even so, every good tree brings forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree brings forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Well, that makes sense. But of course, the relativists would say, well, there's other times when maybe possibly under certain conditions it could be different. Every tree that brings not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits shall you know them. That's right. Look at the fruits of their values. Look at the fruits of the standards that they want to use. According to the architect of the universe, there is one absolute standard, and he is that standard. His word is truth. Truth is not relative to human ideas, to human societies, or human cultures. Relativists, though, justify their view, and they say this. They have an interesting point in a way. Absolutists caused all the suffering that has happened to our world today, they say. It is the evils that we see in our society and our world came from people who believed they were right. Well, of course they did. But instead of correcting the problem that they found, they just said, we'll eliminate the truth. That's what they've done, in essence. So yes, there have been mistakes made by people who thought they were right, but there have also been wonderful things that have been accomplished by people who believe they're right, and people that followed God, like our founders. They didn't do it perfectly, but what we should have done is fix the mistakes we made humanly and not try to hide the truth or dismiss it, that it doesn't exist and that everything or anything is okay. So today, we're promoting the belief no single person, no single belief is right. Therefore, there's a philosophical war going on in our nation, and we have these enormous and glaring conflicts over abortion, over things like euthanasia, sexuality, race, and religion. America is now fighting and arguing over all these things, but they wouldn't be fighting and arguing if the relativists didn't change the standards. If we all kept the original standards that we believed in and we built this nation on, we'd be going down a different path today. But instead, we're arguing all these points and we're dividing and tolerating things that are self-destructive. And I ask you to think about how dangerous this is to us as a nation. You understand, I'm going to build this starting from a nation view, and we're going to move to the church view. This does affect the church, because we live in this society and it affects us all in its own way. A BBC recently did an interview with the U.S. president. They reported that he sounded somewhat wistful as he spoke to an interviewer about how he's tried to use his voice to move things towards a more ethical and moral outcome. Well, that sounds beautiful. 2 Timothy 3. The problem is this today. The morality has become what a person feels. 2 Timothy. So the question becomes then, what did this individual mean by ethical? What did he mean by moral? That's not defined. You understand my point? That's not defined. But this man's standards, his values are personal to him. They are not absolute. You understand what you understand as ethical and moral is completely different to what he thinks is ethically moral. And so this guy who wants to spread better morals and better ethics is a great supporter of abortion. And so today, since Roe versus Wade, there's 59 million babies have been aborted in America because of relativism. Because in my case, it's not wrong, because I can justify it. Any number of reasons, you understand my point. But I ask you to think about this. That's a small nation. 59 million babies. Nobody asked them. So anyway, it's a sign of our times from a point of view. We all think we're basically good citizens and so on. But God's point of view is totally and uniquely different. 2 Timothy 3, 1, we know this, that in the last days perilous times shall come. Men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, and unholy. They won't have natural affection. They'll be truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. Man, this is us in spades today. Consider a result of this philosophy of no absolute truth. You know, police have always died in the line of duty, in their line of duty. It's a dangerous job. They've always lost police officers. Today, police officers are being attacked specifically because they are police officers. And this is a horrible abomination. And I am going to take off for a minute just to mention a book I read a long time ago. It was called The New Centurions. It was a novel, actually, but it was written by an ex-policeman. And in the book, he makes a really interesting point. And he says this, during the time of Rome, as it was falling because of the decay, the people that were striving to uphold the law were the centurions. They were the policemen of that day. But after a while, the policemen were trying to stop the people from going the direction they were going to save Rome. And the only reason Rome didn't fall sooner was because the centurions were striving to keep the law, but the citizens began to hate the policemen. They hated them because the policemen were stopping them from doing what they wanted to do. And he was saying the police today are the new centurions. They're trying to hold America up. They're trying to support our values and standards and who we are and trying to protect the people. And so they've become the target of attacks. They're killing policemen because they hate them. So that's a value that has certainly changed because of relativism. So last Wednesday, one man drove over three policemen. They were parked there and just drove over them, you know, targeted them. I've seen that like three times now in the news where the people will see a policeman writing a ticket or something and just run right into them and take off. You know, it's unbelievable what's happening. The report of crime in the United States 2014 states this. There were 1,165,000 violent crimes such as murder, rapes, robberies, and aggravated assaults. There were 8,277 property crimes such as burglaries, larceny, thefts, motor vehicle thefts. Financial losses suffered were up to $14 billion. One year of the crime in America. Police made 11,205,000 arrests in 2014. That's not talking about the people who got away. What is happening? We think it's okay. We think it's all right that they have these values. Should have been stopped, and unfortunately it has. National Institute of Drug Abuse reports illicit drug use in the United States has been increasing. 2013, an estimated 24.6 million Americans aged 12 or older, that is 9.4% of the population, had used an illicit drug in the past month. It's amazing. Kids getting high and going to school. Yeah. But who's to say it's wrong? Who's to say in a relativistic world? Who's to say it's wrong? To more than half the population, it's all just relative. To more than half the population. And I think you probably remember that case where there was a soldier who was imprisoned by our government, and his crime was protecting a 12-year-old boy from being raped by an Afghan soldier. And we were told, or he was told, that it was not our responsibility. Even though it was on our property and our camp, they put him in jail for protecting that young boy. How did we ever get here? Well, we have no right to judge their culture. Yes, we do. Righteous judgment. And we are to judge righteous judgment. But they're losing any sight of an absolute truth. So what happens is, we think it's okay to give 400, what is it, billion? Was it $400 billion to Iran? To okay their nuclear buildup? We're thinking it's okay to do this? Just unbelievable. I remember there was a while back that it was in the United States, but a father was being, he was in court, and he was charged with the murder of his daughter. He said it was an honor killing because it was Sharia law. And the judge actually ruled in his favor and let him off. That was like 2 years ago, I think, that happened. And even now we're starting to have various cities that are they're not no-go cities yet, but they are moving in that direction, and they're saying this is Sharia law applies here in our cities in certain sections where they've kind of moved in and taken over. I'll mention that later, I think, a little bit. Anyway, ironically, this philosophy of no standard is fast becoming the standard. It is becoming the standard. According to a survey by Barna Research, and this is back in 1995, about three-quarters of all adults in America reject the notion that there are absolute moral truths. Most Americans believe that all truth is relative to the situation and the individuals involved. Similarly, at least three-quarters of our teens embrace the same position regarding moral truths. And not only did more than 3 out of 4 teens say there was no absolute moral truth, 4 out of 5 also claim nobody can know for certain whether they actually know what the truth is. We used to know. We wrote a Declaration of Independence. We wrote a Constitution, all based on the law of God. We knew. But it's become lost as people want to do their own thing, as human nature is careening out of control in America. It's ending up, I think, dividing our society very much. It is probably the most dangerous thing, and it always happens just before a empire collapses, this issue of relativity here. It always follows after a nation first becomes wealthy and powerful, and then it attracts foreigners who come in and they want to take advantage of it, and they start to congregate in the nation's cities. And so what they do is they do that, and then when some kind of trouble breaks out, those individuals are not loyal to the country they're in. They're loyal to their old country, to their old culture. They won't fight, they won't sacrifice for America. You understand? And what it leads to is these no-go cities that exist now in France and other parts of Europe. And so they have cities where you can't go in. The police can't go in. The fire department can't go in. And Sharia law is the rule everywhere. And no one's allowed to go in. And that's starting to happen here. Like I said, I think Dearborn is one of them, but it's not a no-go yet. But it's moving in that direction. And the more people come in with different values and more cultures we allow to have their own culture within our culture, the more this is going to harm us. Because when trouble comes, they will turn. Not with us. They'll turn against us. And that is happening in our lives in the Church of God. So let's go over to Genesis 3, because this is so important to understand. It's the first sin. It's Satan's mindset. It's his trick and his way to subvert us. It's right here in Genesis 3, and it's a pretty simple but pretty profound. Now the serpent, verse 1, was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yes, has God not said, you shall not eat of every tree in the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, No, we can eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said unto the woman, you shall not surely die, for God does know that in the day that you eat of it, then your eyes shall be open. You'll be as gods, knowing good and evil. In other words, not eating of the tree is God's standard, but his standard doesn't have to apply to you. It doesn't have to. That's his standard. You can do the same thing that he does. You can decide for yourself what standard fits what you want to do. That's his game, and that's the game he's playing on America. That's the game he's playing in God's very own church. So this idea of no standards, you know, was not accepted by our early founders. They saw historically what had happened to Europe. They saw historically where this thing went, and they rejected it. They knew human beings did not have an inherent moral compass. And the idea that we can decide what's right and wrong outside of God's law was not legitimate. But now things are dramatically changed. And I'm saying this because I wonder if we understand how far society has moved in this direction and how dangerous it really is. So CBS anchor Katie Couric described what she thought was good news. And she says a new survey reports that most Americans don't believe their religion is the only path to salvation. Oh, they're joyful about that. ABC correspondent Dan Harris contrasted America's new open-mindedness about faith to the divisive role played by religion in debates of homosexuality and abortion. Because the Christian's view is so divisive, we want to unite everybody and just accept everybody. Disaster. Disaster in the coming. So what my point is, of course, is that Satan is playing the same game he played with Eve, playing the same game that he played with our nation and with where we're headed in, spiritually and morally today. Same trick. And they look at the church, talking about church members now, they look at the church and the church made mistakes. And so we admit that. But the question is, we don't want to go fix those mistakes. We want to reject any authority over us, is what's moving in the church today, rejecting any of that. So we're not looking to correct problems that we may have made in the past. Their answer is instead to choose what they want to believe. So people are choosing a church that goes along with their beliefs today. That's what they're doing. They're not looking for the truth so much. If there's something they don't like in the church they pick, and they just move to another one, you know? Their answer is to choose what they want to believe. Find a church that fits your beliefs and suits you. That's what it is. And so churches today no longer seek to be corrected. I remember that, to me, it was phenomenal, and I don't mean to bring up Mr. Armstrong for those people that don't really have been, I think, taught by this very system that what he did was wrong. But I was so impressed because you never see church leaders saying I was wrong. And I remember in the 70s when he came out, he said, we were wrong on Pentecost. And he was corrected. And we were wrong on DNR, divorce and remarriage. We were wrong on that. We were on the other side of the line. And so we changed on things. And that doesn't seem to exist anymore. It just doesn't seem to exist. Everybody has to claim they're the right ones. They're the only true ones. And yet, how could we be so divided? Over 400 groups? 400 groups? Oh, one truth? 400 groups? Registering to anybody? This is so wrong. Just goofy. Do the math, as some people say, you know. Okay. They won't accept, it seems like sometimes God's people won't accept just plain biblical statements. For example, and I don't want to beat this drum to death, but Sabbath and offerings is an example to me. He talks to us, God says specifically, do not do business on the Sabbath. The churches teach that that is a personal, individual decision that you make, whether you do or not. But God has said in the book of Nehemiah, this is the very reason Judah went into captivity, doing business by buying foodstuffs on the Sabbath. And so, do you need anything more than that? Even though we can point out 5, 6, 7 or more points in the Bible that make it clear, is it need to be any clearer than that? Point out they are leaving it to personal choice. And here's what one of the bigger churches says. The church has never taught that it was wrong or a violation of the Sabbath to eat in a restaurant on the Sabbath. Clearly, Christianity involves an individual choice as to what you do. It's a judgment that individuals have to make. Well, let's go back to 2 Timothy 3. To me, this is a clear example of relativism right inside God's church. The church never taught that it was wrong to eat out on the Sabbath. Yes, they did. In the 60s, they taught against it, and we have literature from the church saying that they knew it was wrong. You couldn't go down to some coffee shop and order something there on the Sabbath. And of course, it's an individual decision, isn't it? But what's the standard for making the decision? You understand? They move the standard. Now it's an individual's choice. Before it was God said. What happened there? We've moved into a relative position, and society has its impact on us. And this is the result of it. This is just one. We don't stick to what God says. You determine what's right and wrong. Wow. Where do we hear that? Genesis 3. But it's the same. It's the same mentality. Another case, you know, the one that says that we're to give offerings 3 times a year. So many churches will wrest the scriptures to say 7 times because you get more money 7 times than you do with 3 times, more than double. So the point is that in ancient times, the people went to the feast. They gave their offerings on the 3 pilgrimage feasts. That's the only time that they were required to give offerings, on the pilgrimage feasts. And they would give that offering, the priest would offer it, and then they would eat it with the priest, and they thought they were, and believed that they, rightly, that they were eating it with God. So that's how it went down. But you understand, how could you do that on atonement? Nobody gave an offering on atonement. Nobody ate the offering. It was a fast day. Only the high priest could make those offerings that were made. So you understand, I'm not going to go through every proof here, but it's obvious, isn't it? It can't be 7. It's 3. But it's your choice, isn't it? So let's see how the same church handles this one. Let us now ask this question. Were Israelites forbidden from including trumpets and atonement along with tabernacles if they wished to do so financially? They could afford to do so? Of course not. You can go anytime you want to Jerusalem, right? Anytime you can go. You got the money. You're not wrong there. Of course not. God stipulated the 3 major festival times when they were required to attend. Oh, whoops, that's right. 3 times you're required. But that did not mean they could not include trumpets atonement if they wished to do so. Well, of course they can go to Jerusalem on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, any day they want, they can go to Jerusalem. That's not even the issue, is it? It's how many offerings. But you see what they did? They distract you. And then they put in something else. And now it's your decision again. It's relativism, and it's come in the church of God, and we've got to go back to our people, have got to go back to God's word is absolute truth, and we have to follow that even if it hurts. It's not about your decision anymore. You could go to Jerusalem anytime they want. The point is not could they go, the issue is the offerings, and he says 3 times. Scriptures are not relative at all. So anyway, I asked us to go to 2 Timothy, and let's go over there and read that same chapter again. And this time, let's go part of the way down. So remember, we started in this with perilous times will come. In the last days, men will be lovers of themselves. They'll want to make the decisions personally. They want to be empowered. They don't want to submit to God. That's what's going to happen in the last days. But look at what he says in contrast here in verse 16. All scripture is given by inspiration of God. It's profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, and instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect and is mature, spiritually, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. That's pretty plain. That is pretty plain. I don't see a lot of movement right there. Matthew 5. You know, it's to me, because of this, we find ourselves in a similar situation today as did ancient Israel. If you remember, I'm not going to go there, but I just want to remind us of a scripture that's so familiar to all of us in Judges 21:25. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And so, because there's no apostle, everyone is letting down in their adamant loyalty to God's law. But we have the chief apostle, and that's Jesus Christ. We have him, and he stated the truth is not relative, Matthew 5. It's not going to change, not going to morph into something different. It's going to be the same all the time. It's not going to change because of what we think. So look at this. Think not, in verse 17, that I'm come to destroy the law or the prophets. I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And he did so as an example, as Isaiah writes. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, not one jot or one tittle shall in any way pass from the law until all has been fulfilled. Whosoever therefore shall break one of the least commandments and teach men so, he shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever shall do and teach them, the same will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Let me just stop for a second. Here's what people, I think, don't understand. They really don't understand this. The ones who now in this life talk against God's commandments are going to be the least in the kingdom. Who are the least in the kingdom? The second resurrection, right? The ones in the first are the first. Those are the ones that teach we obey God's law. The ones that are going to be least are going to be the second resurrection. If in the second resurrection they don't keep God's law as the absolute standard, they're not going to be in the kingdom. We need to understand that's clear. It's not some obscure thing that's being said here. For I say to you, except your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall in no case enter into the kingdom of God. You see, he's actually saying what I said. This is the truth here. Jeremiah 17. Jeremiah 17, one of our great scriptures. It's not saying you decide. Christ didn't come to destroy the law. Therefore, do we do business on the Sabbath? No. Do we give offerings seven times? No. We do it when God said to do it. So, my point is that God has tangible, real, absolute values and standards that are embraced in his law. And those laws are going to outlast the entire universe. And that is so true. But relativism continues to grow in popularity. We're talking 4 out of 5 teens that there is no absolutes. You know, I don't know if you could ever find it. You know, they're not going to look. They're happy making up their own decisions on what's right and what's wrong. And the reason is here. The truth gets in the way of what we want. Jeremiah 17 and verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, the Lord, search the heart. Try the reins to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings, according to his standard and his law. But this point of relativity in our values, our standards, our morals, and our ethics, those are what caused Eve to take of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's why Lamech killed a man for hurting him. It's why Achan took the clothes and took some gold. It's why King Saul saved the king and the best of the animals. It's why Jeroboam had to change the holy day so no one would go down to Jerusalem for the feast. He had to change that for political reasons. Ananias and Sapphira claimed that they had given so much money. Why? So they wanted to endear themselves to the ministry, you know, but they didn't do that. They just lied. It's why they did it, though, and it's why we sin. It's why we sin when we do sin. It's the same thing. We justify it. We move it around in our heads. We adapt the truth to suit our desires, and we twist it, if necessary, to make it politically correct sounding to us. And so it's just human nature. But it's everywhere because we're human. And so in government, it does what's best to those who are the governors. Corporations do what is best for their profits and their leaders. The churches do what's in their best interest. And individuals, we tend to do the same thing. We do what we want most. And so my point is, if we let relativism into our life when we want something, we do this when we want something more than God's law. And you and I can be rude, we can be selfish, we can be lustful, and we can do that, and we don't think we have to correct ourselves because we'll justify it. They deserve it, you know? But it's relativism, and it's against God's law to do those things, in case anybody hasn't read 1 Corinthians 13. I don't mean to be sarcastic here. You know I am sometimes, maybe. We don't think when we sin that our sin is related to Christ's death. Do you understand? If we did, we wouldn't do it. We make an adjustment in our head. We put it in the context of what we're experiencing in the moment, not the reality of God's law and his law of love. From our point of view, it depends on the circumstances. That's the line. And so we bring relativism into our lives. And I want you to look at a historic example here. It was this philosophy that led to the murder of Jesus Christ. And I want us to have a look at that for a moment. So, John 18 here. The religious leaders were envious. They had Christ arrested. And their motivation was not truth, of course, as it was what was expedient in their mind. That's what it was. It's expediency is what motivated the Jewish religious leaders in their time. And so they had him arrested, and they said this: it was better for one man to die than the rest of the nation to perish. In other words, they feared a grassroots movement based on Christ's teaching that he was a kind, good man and that everybody was corrupt. So based on his teaching, they were afraid of a grassroots movement to try to take the empire out of Rome's control. And so they said, it's better that he die than that we lose our positions, our offices, and our incomes. You understand? But they said then the whole nation. But they knew it wasn't the whole nation. It would be them they were protecting. And so it was expedient that they do this. They had to do it. In God's mind, you're killing my son. In their mind, we're saving the nation. It's all relative, you understand, to the circumstances. That's what was going on there, John 18. They sent him to Pilate, had him flogged, and Christ was brought back to Pilate once again. And then when he was brought back, this Roman ruler spoke to him in John 18, verse 37. Pilate therefore said unto him, are you a king then? And Jesus answered and said, you say that I'm a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause I came into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? Because it's relative. It depends on the circumstance. It depends on the situation. And you understand Pilate was a political ruler from Rome. And do you think that he hadn't seen the truth maligned and twisted and adjusted in the politics of that Roman system? He had no idea what's truth. It depends. We just make it up as we go along when it suits our needs. That was Pilate. And so he knew better and washed his hands, but said, go ahead. I'll just put it on your head. It's not mine. You know, but he killed him. No absolute truth. You think he ever in his life ever saw someone sacrifice themselves, be willing to suffer, take a loss for the sake of the truth? Do you think Pilate ever saw that? I doubt if he ever saw it. I think this was stunning to see this man say, this is the truth, and I'm willing to die for it and be flogged and have my skin ripped off me for this truth that I hold so dear, the Father's law, his way of life. So the reality is that it's just human nature. It's just human to do this. We will adjust the truth in our favor. And so the real authority in our lives becomes us and not God's law. And we mostly, humanly, in this country at least, we submit to the authority that we want to submit to. But human nature will always adjust it, always adjust the truth to fit our own needs and our own desires and so on. And so you and I find ourselves called by God in this time, in this age, and within this culture and our world that we live in. And other times, God's people experience different things. But my point today is that the society we are in and the culture we're in exerts enormous pressure on us subconsciously. So you know this is truth, if there is any truth. And that is things that were absolutely horrible in the past, over time, we just take it for granted. It's the way things are, and we're no longer horrified. That is the truth, isn't it? And that's what happens to us. Society makes a change, and a few years down the line, it's just the way things are. You think it doesn't affect us? Of course it affects us. How could we be split up into 400 groups? How could we have all these range of doctrines? How could we flaunt God's law and abrasively go against it by writing and preaching? How could we do that? Even if it's one thing. How? How did that happen? Because we just did it, and we did it, and we did it more and more, and we did it more and more, and then it was just acceptable. In the 60s, nobody went to a restaurant. Nobody. Right? Just as an aside, I don't mean to just belabor everything. But when I first came into the church, I was like so impressed, you know. And I'd go on moving crews to help people move and stuff. And when people would die, I'd go there and help them move. And I'd always ask the mate, you know, hey, do you want these plain truths or good news? You know. And they'd say, no, I don't want them. The mates didn't want them. Take them. Get them out of here. And so I collected them. And I've, you know, got them back to the 30s and stuff like that. Not complete sets, but mostly. And I had them hardbound and everything. And I used to love going back to the old Good News and Tomorrow's World and reading them, because then is the church had a powerful, profound commitment to God. It wasn't lukewarm like it is today. It was inspiring to see what people would get their old clunker out, and they'll replace the rods in the engine so that they could get to the feast. You know, they'd limp this car in, you know, to go. They'd do whatever they had to do to drive across the United States to go to Texas and live in a tent, because that's what God said. And they'd do it because God said it. Man, it was inspiring, some of those old magazines. You know, the spirit that was there. And so that's gone. It really is gone. We're really sophisticated now. You know, we are. We think. But we've lost something in the transition. We really have. So I'm asking us this. Since that is so true, that we will modify and adjust as society moves and adjusts, just human nature to do it. But since that's true, that means you and I need to be on a constant vigil, as it were, to realize that relativism is the culture of our time. And so you and I need to look inside ourselves to see how much has this affected us in our time that we live in. Be on a vigil. We need to understand what this movement is. We need to understand how dangerous it is. And we need to make sure that we are not caught up in it or motivated by it so that we let our standards shift around according to what we want at the time, but rather look to the law of God as our inspiration. And I say this, is what we're doing, ask ourselves, what we want or is it what Christ wants in us? And it's true, Christ will forgive our sins, won't he? He'll forgive our sins. But only if we face it, only if we admit it, and only if we strive to change. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. We're just going to continue doing the wrong thing. He's not going to tolerate deceitfulness in us. We can't be found to be imposters in this Christian calling. We've got to understand this truth. We've got to own the truth. It's got to become ours. Romans 12. Romans 12. His truth becomes ours. You know, a man once said this, there's always two sides to every question. Another man standing by said, yeah, there's two sides to flypaper, but it sure depends on which side the fly lands. Makes sense, doesn't it? Okay. So let's strive to not waver, brethren. Let's not go in that other lane. Let's not find ourselves on the other side of the flypaper. Let's not justify our actions and our thoughts. Instead, let's change them. Let's fix the mistakes we made to the best of our ability. Seek the mind of God. Love his truth. And seek to live it and become it, as it were. We have a purpose that is sure. And we have a hope that is real. We can't lose sight of this magnificent calling. It is bigger than anyone could ever believe. And so, don't allow ourselves to be fooled by modern relativism. Strive to live by what's true. As it says in Romans 12, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God.